This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
So, as you've seen, joining me on the panel up here, we have on the far end Aaron Porter, who is President-elect of the National Union of Students. Also with us is Dr. Matthew Wyman. You heard from him earlier in one of the questions from the floor. And, as you can see, just joining me now, on my immediate right, is Professor Sue Law, Director of Brackets Academic Practice at the Higher Education Academy. I'm going to give her a few moments just to sort of catch her breath and bring in on the question we've already had raised, both Aaron and Matthew. Then we'll go into the presentation. And that will lead us a little bit more time at the end for further questions to all three of them. Because, Aaron, I could sense that you were burning to get in on that question, which related to, from the back there, from our colleague from University of Plymouth, about the Brown Review and what impact. I mean, I know you don't want to take as a given that students are going to, or graduates are going to pay more, but if they do, what impact is that like to have in terms of demands and needs for quality assurance?
Yeah, sure. I think what's really important to say in the immediate term is that I've become increasingly frustrated when it's described as a fees review, because of course it's not, it's a funding review, and the title is an independent review into university finance and student and student support. But I recognise the testing economic pressures that institutions are facing, and indeed Monday's recent announcement from the new Chancellor and the Chief Secretary to the Treasury has also made things tougher. But in direct response to the question, if in the event that students are asked to pay more and the unit of resource is further cut, I think we will inevitably start to see student expectations increase even further. And they have already. I mean, I'm sure I don't need to outline to you that are in institutions the way in which there have been changes already over the last few years. And I think that means we need to think about induction particularly more than anything else. I'll come on to sort of regulation in a second. But I think if we're not careful, what we'll start to see is consumer mentality amongst our students growing even more so. And I think that fundamentally impacts and actually undermines interaction, as I see it, as part of an academic community. Something that's being hugely lost, and indeed, in many institutions, isn't even introduced or broached when students enter an undergraduate programme for the first time. And so I would say, whether fees remain at £3,200 or whether they go up to £5,000, actually, we need collectively, as a student body and indeed as an academic community, to revisit that point, and I think that's the top priority, irrespective of what Brown reports. I do think also that on the point of regulation, we need to ensure that students are able to navigate the information that's out there. I won't repeat what's been said, but I do agree with the point that actually lots of information is out there, but it's not particularly easy to navigate the way through it. And one of the challenges for that is, of course, is because students are actually looking for different pieces of information. Some students might prioritise graduate employability or the speed with which they can get a job. Others perhaps are more interested in what happens to them whilst they're in higher education, whether that's the staff-student ratio, whether that's contact time, whether that's the additional costs, accommodation, books and so on, of being in higher education. And some, yes, perhaps even a handful, might be interested in what the QAA says about an institution. And we need to think about how that can be articulated in a way that isn't just one for the quality geeks. So I think it's something that we do need to find a way which allows students to navigate it and can be a great deal more sort of regulated. And the final thing I'll just say before handing on is that I think if institutions want to continue charging the fees that they are or they want to charge more, we need to get them to outline what they're going to provide to students more explicitly and hold them to account to it. And I believe if they don't deliver on what they say they're going to deliver, I think we should be looking at ways of potentially clawing back funding from institutions if they fail to deliver on their promises.
Thank you very much. Matthew, I want to bring you on this because of particularly the work you've been doing at Keele, but also putting this together quite nicely with what we heard this morning about that there is perhaps a danger that we may end up focusing. I mean, Aaron sort of hinted at it with his consumer mentality. We may end up focusing on things like economically valuable skills, employability, when actually what we heard from Paul Ramsden and Morag this morning is actually real quality is about something much broader, about scholarship and so on. And you worked on this, didn't you, sorting out graduate attributes at Keele. So how did you get around this?
Yeah, actually, if I may just make a comment about what's being said about data before...
Of course, please do.
before answering your question, Mike.
Don't worry about that. Politicians do that all the time to me. They say, before I come to that, can I just say this?
I realise my background was teaching Russian politics, and, of course, we learned a lot about the planned economy when we when we taught that. And there's a famous Pravda cartoon about a nail factory, which was given a target of producing 9 tons of nails, and the way it met its planned target was by producing 1 9-ton nail. And I think the thing that's horrifying a lot of us in the profession about this discussion about quality information is the potential of any kind of information to actually distort higher education activities. And while I a lot of what's was on Anthony McLaren's list is clearly essential. I suppose the plea that we'd like to make is that if there's going to be information, that there's loads and loads of it, rather than it concentrating on one or two very small measures. Because if we end up just producing information about student contact hours on core modules, then vice chancellors will shift all their resources into core modules, and all the other modules will suffer. So, you know, we really have to be so careful about that. I'd be the politician now and say sorry. What was the question
about? Well, it was really about the danger of us as graduate students pay more. Whether there is a danger that we end up, the whole quality assurance becomes all about the economically valuable skills, about outcomes rather than what we heard this morning about the whole process and scholarship and so on.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so vital that we really think about as universities about how we're designing education for learning, rather than education for teaching or education for training. Mm. And I think what's interesting about the graduate attributes agenda as opposed to the employability agenda is that it focuses on the whole student and what the student's, the kind of contribution that the student wants to make, whether it's in economy and employment or whether it's in public service or whether it's just it's their own private lives. Mm. And the education is for all of these things. Mm. And
as we heard from the Queen Mary's list of attributes as well, which Warren gave us this morning.
I mean, perhaps just one more point on that, which would be, I mean, really it's also about how we think about our whole education. Not as with students as consumers of products, but students as partners in the whole process, as Paul Ramsden was saying. So we're far too control freak. Yeah. We're too much control freaks as a sector. We over control the curriculum rather than negotiating with students about the kind of things that they want to learn about the subjects that they've chosen. We over control assessment, and in particular we insist on far too much writing for academic purposes and not enough of almost anything else. And I think talk to any students and you'll find yourself. And you know, in many cases we over control classroom practice as well. So, you know, much more of a negotiated process.
Aaron, we've heard that suggestion that we saw in the figures there, not very much sense that students feel involved in the process of deciding content and teaching methods. How do we change that?
What we should also note is there has actually been progress, both with regard to the numbers of students that do feel involved, but actually the numbers of students that want to be involved. And I think with that figure of 57%, actually we broke it down by the extent to which students want to be involved. We have to accept that not every single student wants to be the kind of student that's prepared to sit round the staff student liaison committee in the first Wednesday of every month. And there are some students that frankly just want to know that their feedback is being acted upon and it's communicated back to them. I think modes of student engagement is something that in some respects is increasingly becoming outdated. We've got a really diverse student body, and actually some of the mechanisms that we use, like the staff student liaison committee, if that's all it is in isolation, actually that may be one of the reasons why there are barriers to the part-time student or the mature student that's got that has caring responsibilities. We need to think outside of the box. I think technology has a role to play here. I think we can think more speedily about how we communicate back what students are saying. I can't tell you the numbers of examples of students that are asked to fill out module evaluation forms, and they do it with goodwill. And actually, I see with the goodwill with which departments treat those. However, very few students actually see even the results, certainly not the outcomes and the impacts that those surveys have. That shouldn't be beyond us to try and communicate that. A simple thing that I think would actually lead to students feeling more involved and actually can get us on the right pathway.
Matthew, from the teaching side, what's your view on that?
I think evaluation's key here. I think that the problem with a lot of systems which are that they are the appearance of the involvement of students rather than the reality, and the end of module questionnaire is a wonderful example of that. And really, what we need to do is to shift towards systems of evaluation which are much more of a conversation between the teacher and the people who are learning, and which is focused on learning and what's been easy to learn, what's been difficult to learn, what have been the obstacles learning, and so on. And that becomes much more private. There's no need to publish those results because it'll be completely evident that they've been acted on. So I think, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Okay, well, I don't want to stand between you and coffee. Okay. What I may suggest, if you would like to grab any of our panel members or suit for questions, just grab them before they escape to coffee themselves, and you can put your direct questions to them. So I just like to say, grab them in the nicest possible way, I should say. Can we just finish with a round of applause for all of our panel members and speakers? Thank you.